You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Episode 76, The Paradox.
Welcome to The Paradox with your attending, Dr. Eric Larson. He is a practicing anesthesiologist and clinical assistant professor at Michigan State University College of Human Medicine. Listen in as he takes you behind the scenes of what practicing medicine in today's ever-changing world is like with another doctor. The Paradox is a fun and accidentally informative show for physicians, patients, or anyone who has ever found themselves in a waiting room.
Welcome to The Paradox. I'm your host, Dr. Eric Larson. Thank you for joining me as we explore the U.S. medical system in a fun, informative format through expert analysis. Today's expert is Vinay Patel. He's a pharmacist and the founder of MakoRx, which is a pharmacy benefit manager, or PBM. For longtime listeners, there are a number of episodes we've done on PBMs, and the pharmacy benefit managers are generally the villains. And so today I wanted to reach out to someone who is doing something a little different. As you may recall, pharmacy benefit managers have ways of making money that is less than honorable, I guess you would say, where they receive kickbacks and rebates that are not designed to lower the cost for the employers or those who are their clients, essentially. Instead, they line their pockets with these funds, and they have a tremendous lobbying arm, both at the federal and state levels, as they're some of the largest healthcare lobbyists in the country, and can set regulations and legislation that is favorable to them. And as I think you'll find, Mr. Patel has a really interesting story where he has sort of turned the PBM model on its head, where instead of having obscured charges and fees, he's actually making everything transparent, and that's his goal. Instead of also using the large big box pharmacies, he's trying to leverage all the independent pharmacies, of which there are quite a few. I think somewhere around a third of the pharmacies in the country are independent, and then he's trying to leverage them as a way of sort of banding together, certainly using independent physicians and other healthcare providers as a way to sort of protect the local flavor of healthcare. And if there's one general principle we hold fairly dear at The Paradox, it is to encourage choice, high quality, and low cost care. And so that's what he's aiming to do in providing the service. And so I think it's a very interesting story. And I think if you're a physician, I think there's lots of really interesting things you learn and maybe even look into. And certainly as if you're a pharmacist and you're not part of his network, although most of them are, I think he says about three quarters of the pharmacies in the country are part of his network, it's probably something you want to consider and or at least look into, because I think it's an opportunity for a way of competing against the larger box stores that can sort of beat you on some aspects on convenience. For instance, getting a prescription at Walgreens, you can go to any Walgreens in the country. That's something that's very tough to compete against if you're a pharmacist, if you have patients who are, you know, on vacation. But anyway, so I think this is actually a really interesting concept, and it's one that I think has the potential to take off, and as does Vinay Patel as well. I'd encourage you to visit the website at theparadox.com/076. There you can find the show notes for the show with ways of contacting Mr. Patel and also past episodes that relate to pharmacy benefit managers if you have your appetite whetted and you want to delve into more of the insidious things that the PBMs are doing. Those are found at the show notes page. I'd also encourage you, if you're a Patreon, I do put out extra content from time to time. It tends not to be medical, so it is more political, in fact, entirely political. And also one of my other appearances on other podcasts I place there at Patreon. And so for as low as $2 a month, you can have access to that content. I've done a number of updates on my good friend Justin Amash, who's a congressman from Michigan. You might be familiar with him. He certainly was in the news starting this last summer, basically throughout. And he was also an interview in episode 3 of the show when I first launched. We talked about healthcare and Congress and sort of what things are going on in Congress, which I think we found out is pretty much nothing. And that was sort of the conclusion from our episode. But certainly his thoughts on what would be the best way to attack those problems with the healthcare industry that we see today. We delved into Star Trek and Star Wars and which one he preferred, which I think is a little bit interesting conversation. But this last week, I spoke to Nathan Lemer, who is a former policy advisor to Ajit Pai, who is the FCC chairman, currently who is dealing with a lot of issues, especially most prominently net neutrality. And he was one who helped develop the public policy and certainly the advocacy for the positions that Chairman Pai advocated. And we had a good discussion because Nathan also, in his previous life before that, was a legislative aide at the State House and then also in D.C. for Representative Amash. And so he knows him personally and professionally. And so we had a long discussion about if Amash decided to run for president or if he decides to run for Congress as an independent, what does that mean? What are his odds of winning? What sort of impact would he have in the race? What kind of person is he? And so all those things can be found at that episode. It's entirely possible that I will release this as a regular episode just for fun for the regular, so you have a little idea of what we're talking about. If things get more interesting in this race, I will plan on doing these updates weekly, and you get some insight from people who know Justin and have an ability to talk about him in a different light than you get in most places in the media. So anyway, that's a little bit of thing. If you want to check that out at patreon.com/theparadox, and that'll get it spelled T-H-E-P-R-A-D-O-C-S. Just like the website, which is theparadox.com. But without further ado, Vinay Patel on a PBM not looking to rip you off. Enjoy. Welcome. I'm here with my new friend, Vinay Patel, who's the founder, CEO of the Self-Insured Pharmacy Network, which is a pharmacy benefit manager organization. So, Vinay, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Larson. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled. So, and I'll sort of mention this before, but you as a pharmacy benefit managers have been the focus of a number of episodes of my show, The Paradox, where oftentimes have been the villains, but I appreciate you coming on. And I want you to just describe briefly what your background is and how you, I saw your pharmacist, but how did you end up sort of where you are right now?
Yeah. So, you know, working as an independent pharmacist, owning, managing pharmacies throughout my career, it's been clear then in various different roles as a pharmacist, it's been clear that the pharmacy benefit managers as an industry have almost complete control over how pharmacists practice, how much money they make, and you know, everything from what they're told to tell patients and what they can't tell patients, and so on and so forth. And so it became abundantly clear when we operated pharmacies how much patients and employers were getting overcharged for medications and how little pharmacies were getting reimbursed for these medications. And so we really sought out to form Self-Insured Pharmacy Networks and our newly formed company, MakeRx, to solve the problem of you know, what the industry has created.
Right. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show, because I think it's real interesting. As I said, the PBMs, group purchasing organizations, as well, the GPOs, have sort of been the villains in a number of my episodes as far as the problems with healthcare pricing and the explosion of price. Can you explain the purpose of a PBM? You know, I assume everyone always has a derogatory sort of feel of what a middleman is. You know, that's always, it's like being a used car salesman, right? When people say, oh, you're just the middleman. because there's this perception that there's someone who is totally superfluous. You know, you don't need them. They're just kind of in the way. They're just getting their cut. And it'd be easier just to sort of the interaction between the other two parties without this person in the middle, right? So explain why PBMs exist and sort of what function they'd have in a well-run healthcare system, you know, what role they play with pharmacies and pharmaceuticals and patients.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a critical role that pharmacy benefit managers play. And at its core, the value of a PBM is to process claims and essentially in real time. When you go to the pharmacy and you give the pharmacy your prescription as a patient, they will actually take that prescription, enter it into their system, and then in real time adjudicate or run that prescription claim through the pharmacy benefit manager. They're affiliated with insurance companies or employers or, you know, various different entities, but that pharmacy benefit manager essentially has outlined what the pharmacy is going to get paid for that medication, what the patient portion of that cost of the medication is, how much they will charge for the medication, And then what the other portion, you know, whether it's an insured company or, you know, an employer group that's paying the other portion of it. So they outline these parameters where, you know, what coverage tier is the medication on, determining cost, and if the medication's covered or not. And so all these rules are applied in a system that gets automatically or electronically run in real time when you go to the pharmacy. And that's really at its core what the value of a pharmacy benefit manager is to sort of adjudicate and manage claims so that they're all collected correctly, and then being able to be distributed to whoever the entities are for payment and invoicing and all that.
In summary, would it be fair to say that I guess the way, because there's so many different healthcare plans, so many different options for people getting their medications, whether they're self-insured or whether they're through their employer, and that the tier-based family, you know, you have to use this medication first before that you try this one. All these rules set up by insurance companies are sort of held in by these pharmacy benefit managers, and they figure all the stuff up real quickly, so the pharmacist doesn't have to try and determine all this stuff, and that makes sure that payment is very quick. Is that pretty much what the PBMs do?
Yeah, exactly. Because of the complexity and the almost infinite variations in health plans and pharmacy options, the system in itself runs, you know, has all these algorithms built in to determine price and coverage and all that. That's right.
And so then pharmacies are essentially just using these PBMs instead of them having to have someone in their back office figure all this stuff out, and you just have someone who is an expert in just this figuring out the payment methods, I guess you'd say, or the like you said, adjudication of all these things, just to make it smooth when you go to the pharmacy, you know exactly how much it costs you based on your deductibles and based on all the things with your insurance.
That's absolutely right from sort of the original intent and purpose of pharmacy benefit managers. I think the broader message here is that they've extended far beyond that central core value now and actually influence whether pharmacies are participating in particular networks of stores and driving traffic to particular pharmacies because of who's in and out of network. They're also determining how much money is, how costly a medication is, depending on what tier and coverage they put in, which medications they put in. So you know, we've slowly the industry's grown to cover so many different areas now, and that's where we are today, and that's the issue.
Right, and so that's kind of your, I don't say philosophical, but that's your angle, I guess, to find a niche in the market, and I've talked in the past about PBMs and didn't really go into specific exactly how they work, but so that's actually a really good synopsis, and that leads us to, I guess, the problem right now with most PBMs. I mean, they're some of the largest healthcare corporations in the country are pharmacy benefit managers, group purchasing organizations. They're not what most people think of when they think of healthcare. They're always thinking of insurance companies. They're thinking of pharmaceutical companies. Right. But when looking at lobbying, I mean, these are the biggest lobbyers in DC, right? I mean, these are the Express Scripts and, right? I mean, these are the big heavy hitters. And they make their money, it seems, oftentimes through obfuscation. I mean, getting rebates and not actually having the rebates go back to the patients, but at times they'll sort of encourage health plans, I suppose, to use a different tiered ways of medications because they get these kickbacks or rebates from the pharmaceutical companies, correct? And then they'll then pocket those.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you hit on a couple of great points there, Dr. Larson. Obfuscation is the key word. The complexity and obfuscation of prices for these drugs is sort of their central value proposition in revenue and revenue streams that they generate for themselves, and lobbying power. They have tremendous lobbying power. A good headline comes to mind just this past week. Half of all the profits United Healthcare made this past year in 2019 came from its pharmacy division, OptumRx, and they made over $14 billion in 2019. That's a tremendously huge company.
Yeah, and that's one of the rubs with insurance companies. So insurance companies, if you're not really big, you're not going to be able to acquire or merge with a pharmacy benefit manager. So you have to rely on these groups to basically adjudicate all your claims. And then they, in many ways, I guess, sort of, they structure your tiers, like, right? Like the order in which you start a medications for a certain condition, right? Like you That's start right. with drug X, then drug Y, then drug Z. And they will change these tiers or change the medications those based on the benefits they get from the pharmaceutical companies themselves, which doesn't help the insurance company. Certainly doesn't help the patient if it's, you know, changing things, but helps them because they may have a better rebate and also may encourage them to recommend more expensive drugs because the percentage savings is or the percentage savings that they get back is higher, right?
That's right. That's right. A really good classic example of what you're talking about, where medications fall under certain coverages, is for insulin. And for example, there is a generic insulin out there in the market called Lispro. That's the generic for Humalog. And they came, the manufacturer of Humalog came out with this generic to help lower prices for diabetics. That we, you know, we see stories every day of how diabetics are foregoing or extending their insulin and dying, because many diabetics dying because they can't afford their insulin or they're having to ration it. And so the manufacturer of Humalog came out with a generic Lispro, and the next issue, and there was a great article written about this, is which insurance company is covering the generic. Okay, we have a generic now, and we know that it's less expensive, about half the price of the branded insulin product Humalog. But there aren't any insurance companies, there aren't many insurance companies or many PBMs offering the generic on their formulary. And you know, the reasoning for the PBMs not putting this on their formulary is it's cheaper for the plan sponsor to have the brand and get the rebate. And I have two follow-up questions to that. One, it's not cheaper to the members, which at the end of the day, we're here to serve the patients that need these medications. This isn't some sort of commodity or luxury that people are buying. This is healthcare. And two, because they have to buy the branded product. And two, how much of that rebate is getting passed on to the plan sponsor, and how much money is made by the PBM for keeping the branded product on their formulary, which we don't know, right? This is part of the obfuscation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the business model, right? You have, it's very interesting because, you know, you hear about these problems, and it's the people who are always blamed are the pharmaceutical companies. And I'm not going to say it's not them, it's not the insurance companies, but there are oftentimes these players that the PBMs that you don't really hear about, and they sort of get off scot-free, at least as part of the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that there are so many entities in the healthcare supply chain that just keep pointing fingers at each other that we forget, and we can't just isolate one enemy here. It's everyone has to come forward and say, I have contributed to this problem, and here's what we need to do about it.
Right.
Insurance companies, pharmaceutical manufacturers, pharmacy benefit managers, it's not simple or easy to say it's just one person's fault. There's a level of complexity here where everyone's playing a role.
Well, it is very much like a Rube Goldberg device, right? In that you have all these sort of parts in place, and everyone looks at it and say, well, I can't remove that part because the whole thing sort of falls apart. And so I can't, you know, everybody's important because you can't envision another way of doing things. I look at that situation and you say, okay, you've got insurance companies who usually have to contract the pharmacy benefit manager. You would expect that that insurance companies want to keep costs low so they can provide better premiums for their the employers who are hiring them to provide insurance for their employees, and that will make them more competitive in the market and get a larger market share, and so that they would want lower prices. So you would think that there would be a pharmacy benefit manager that would say, hey, we're all selling the same kind of stuff, right? I mean, it's the same medications that everyone's moving around. All we're doing is just trying efficient ways of adjudicating these claims, and for these insurance companies. And so, it would behoove us to, if we provide it for a lower cost, that's really, as long as you can do the job as far as going through the claims, and you can do all the paperwork, which is really what people are hiring you for. Mm-hmm. That if you can provide that same service at a lower price, that price point would be a much bigger I would guess, be a much bigger draw than you know, not have. I mean, if you're cheaper, you're going to get a lot more business. So I'm always surprised that there's not someone who could just bust into this market easily.
So there's two points there that you hit on, Dr. Larson. One is the value proposition for a pharmacy benefit manager. So we have to look at who the customer is, and this is just my personal opinion. I don't think that the big PBMs out there view their customer as the employer. I truly believe that their customer is the pharmaceutical manufacturers that are really providing them the lion's share of revenue for their company. And so this goes back to the entire misaligned incentives in the healthcare industry itself, in the broader healthcare industry, but applied to pharmacy. They're here to serve the needs of pharma, of the pharmaceutical manufacturers that they're collaborating with to get large revenue streams from branded products and the rebates that they get from those branded products and all the other ancillary service management fees that they get to help encourage and promote branded pharmaceutical products as really who they're serving and sort of that they've recreated their value proposition to that industry. And so, you know, they said, look, if I can save this employer 10 or 15% on their pharmacy, which used to be, it's not today, but used to be maybe 15%, 20%. No one was paying attention to it. It was ignored. It was just another line item. The big cost was still healthcare and still is today, but pharmacy is growing now over 30% and everyone's paying attention to it. Where they're saying, even if I can save the employer 5 or 10%, they're really not paying attention or care. So why don't I just focus my attention here and really maximize the revenue opportunity from our other partners? And so they've really realigned who their customer is. And now that there's a lot of attention and heat on this, they may be trying to reorganize that business model internally, but it's like turning the Titanic. And also the savings, right? I think that there is a much, much smaller opportunity to try to attract more and bigger clients and employers from the big three, which control 80% of the market as it is today. So there's, you know, they're just stealing from each other now if they were to try to go at the cost savings angle. But that bucket of money is so little that they don't put in much energy or effort into that.
Yeah, it seems like, again, it seems like there's a lot of opportunity there for people to get into the market. Is it, because I feel like you could argue, well, maybe the reason they have this advantage is because since they're so big that they can acquire medications or they can get better contracts than other PBMs. But it sounds like that's really not the case. Like, I mean, their cost per unit for insulin or whatever is the same as anybody else. I mean, they're obviously not purchasing the things, but.
Right. you hit the point on the head there with the cost of the medications itself. The drug manufacturers and PBMs are essentially setting the prices for these medications, and there's not much variance. Strictly from a PBM perspective, they don't own drugs, they don't distribute drugs, they're processing claims. And so they're just setting contracted rates for how much this medication is just based on an arbitrary list price number. Everyone's buying it for essentially the same price when it comes to a branded product. There's a lot more variation in the generics market, but they're essentially just setting the price and where you go. Just like in healthcare, determines how much you pay. A very good simple example for your listeners is taking, for example, a can of Coke. You know that a can of Coke probably costs around 50 cents at Sam's Club or Walmart, and it costs maybe $1.35 or $1.55 at the convenience store or gas station. But you know, I'll sort of throw this out there. How much do you think a can of Coke costs at Disneyland, Dr. Larson?
Yeah, I think it's probably like $4.
$4, right? $5, $10, yeah. Right? So, right. And that's the point here. It's the same exact product. It's the same exact service, whether it's healthcare or whether it's medical care, or whether it's prescription medications, it's the same drug, everyone's buying it from the same place, because you walk into an emergency room or hospital, you're paying 10 times as much for that same medication you could get at an independent pharmacy for pennies. Right. And everyone's essentially buying it for the same price. There's a little bit of variation. There's, you know, CVS and Walgreens may be able to buy it for a couple cents cheaper because of their share of the market and volume that they drive. But, you know, that's the whole point in healthcare. It's the site of service that's determining price. Just because you go to a certain place, you're paying a certain price. And that's essentially what the PBMs are doing, is driving traffic to certain sites of service and setting the prices. And the real big game is in the rebate dollars. And that's really how they're hooking a lot of these employers to throw a tremendous amount of rebate dollars that they're getting from pharmaceutical manufacturers, because they control millions of lives. And these small guys trying to break into the market don't have access to that kind of purse power that these companies are using to leverage clients.
So it's fair to say that a small PBM does not have the ability to get the rebates that the larger ones do? Is that sort of one of their...
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
So,
right.
Well, that makes sense then.
The number of lives that you manage determine how much attention you have from pharma and how much money you're going to get from them.
And that makes a lot more sense why it's hard to get in as a small player, right? Because you may be able to do all the other things for less and have lower list prices, but you're not going to give that bonus or whatever at the end, which... turns out is only 5% of the bonus that maybe the other players did, the other large PBMs got. You don't know. Yeah. Cause you don't know what kickback or rebate they're getting. You just, you're getting something. You're like, oh, well, that's better than nothing. And I suppose it's probably busy in lots of companies. It's hard to, you know, you're maybe fighting over $1,000 or $2,000 and you're sort of like, well, it's not that big a deal. It's not worth the effort. Right. Mm-hmm. I always feel like it's a lot like when you go and buy a car, use car lot, and you get down to the last couple hundred dollars and you're just like, I just don't want to sit here for another, you know, 4 hours haggling over a couple hundred dollars. The problem is, of course, for them, that couple hundred dollars, that's like all profit. And so they have every incentive to sit there all day and for that guy to get his commission, because for him, that's an extra $300 he's going to walk in, you know, walk out the door with at the end of the day.
That's right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so, okay. So you're not a big pharmacy benefit manager. The self-insured pharmacy network, and now it's part of, I'm sorry, you said Mako?
Mako Rx.
So why don't you describe how you guys are different and what market you're going after and how you hope to be successful?
Absolutely. So we are we don't like to use the word PBM. We'd like to refer to ourselves more as a pharmacy benefits administrator. But we went out to the market and we looked at all these prices. We researched and investigated drug prices across the industry. And in its simplest form, we actually went and found the cost for the true cost for these drugs that pharmacies are paying for medications. And we said, okay, well, instead of doing a list price discount, which is what everyone else is offering, we're going to offer a cost plus model. So we're going to take what the pharmacies are buying the drugs for and add a fixed margin and essentially go out there and tell employers today that there's two big misconceptions that we hear all the time. One is, what I pay my pharmacy benefit manager is what the pharmacy is getting paid. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. We have hundreds of claims where we've analyzed how much employers pay and how much pharmacies are getting reimbursed. And that's what's called spread pricing, employers getting overcharged and pharmacies underpaying, and the PBM keeping that difference without the two knowing that this is going on. And so we eliminate the spread by going to this cost plus model. And the second piece really that differentiates us is we are, the broker consultant will come into an employer and say, if you don't have CVS and Walgreens in your network, then you don't have pharmacy, right? So the real message here is that, and I'll ask you a quick question. If you were to guess at the percent of pharmacy locations across the country, of all the pharmacy stores, how many of those are independent? What would you guess?
So I think I would always say not many.
Not so many.
But there are actually a lot more. And just when I think about town, there are actually quite a few independent pharmacies in town. Like, I'm sure there are thousands that actually exist.
Yeah. Yeah, the most common answer we hear is 10%. Independent pharmacy is a dying breed. And that's really where we come in and say a third of all pharmacies, 33% or 22,000 stores across the country are independent pharmacies. You just don't see them going to and from work because you see CVS and Walgreens at every corner. Mm-hmm. But they're there in your community, quietly serving patients and members, to providing high quality care and great customer service as a way to compete against the big box stores. And so we're coming in to say, one, our model is cost plus. We've found the cost of these medications, and now you can actually see when your member gets a Z-Pak or when your member gets a blood pressure or cholesterol medication, that it actually costs 81 cents or $2.31 for that drug. It's not $25 or it's not $35 just because that's what the copay is. And then you also get to see exactly how much the pharmacy gets paid because we're showcasing that on the invoices to employers, that the margin that pharmacy makes is right there, allocated to you to see now the true cost of the drug, the margin, and we apply that cost plus model at over, right now we have over 16,000 independent pharmacies in our cost plus network to help advocate for them and really bring them to the employers to showcase all the different services that they offer in addition to what the big box stores can.
That's really interesting. I have a direct primary care physician. So, and in Michigan, you're allowed to dispense medications as a uh-huh. physician. So, when it comes to generic drugs, for instance, like we got, I'll just give you an example. We had 30 of Zofran. My kid, we have a family of migrant nurses, and so they always need Zofran, and it was $1 for 30 of them. You know, so it was because we pay 10% above wholesale. So that's what you're talking about. You're talking about you show what the list price is, how much it actually costs from the wholesaler. Essentially, right? And then how much do you get charged actually at the pharmacy? And it is stunning how someone who has an HSA or something to try and find the medications, the price is just, it's crazy how different it is. I mean, we just got a medication yesterday or the day before, and it was 10 times more expensive at, one box store versus another. Same thing, right? It's really remarkable. And it's never consistent, right? It's not always the same one that's more expensive.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And so, and then that's to your point, that's exactly what the next iteration of our model is all about. It's doing what many insiders claim is an impossible feat. We're actually unifying the independent pharmacies together to buy from a wholesaler that is now going to allow, essentially everyone in America to know what the true cost of these drugs are and really lower the high uncontrolled cost of medications really going to that next level to make sure that cost basis is, as accurate as possible.
Well, it's pretty exciting. I mean, this is the transparent, there are always the ability that you can pass laws that force transparency or you add extra regulations. But I think, certainly when you look, if you want to be honest with yourself and you look at the amount of dollars that these companies have to spend lobbying in D.C. or the state capitals or wherever you want to try and pass laws, mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to be the ones who are controlling the entire process, regulatory process. And so all the laws will be favorable to them. Right. Maybe you could strong arm one thing through. But as you've sort of outlined, there are about 10 different ways they can make money that are hidden. And so you may plug one hole, but the others just get a little bit bigger and essentially you're not going to make much progress. You're only going to defeat them through, or at least fix the system through competition and an open market.
Right. That's right.
And that's right. That's what you're doing, right? that's your goal.
That's our goal. That's our mission. That's what we're driven to do, is to support and advocate for the independent pharmacies to help better take care of their patients. By providing a model that can drive traffic to them with lower cost options for members and savings for employer groups, and really highlighting now what we've all come to the table for, which is quality of care. Let's stop the conversation around the country is how can I get drugs for cheaper, and we need to focus on that and we need to address that. Now that we've gotten to the cost, now let's talk about how pharmacy can be used as a tool to lower your medical care costs. It's not two different, buckets that operate independently. They're all connected. We're all here to keep patients healthier, improve the quality of care. so we can lower this really big bucket, which is total healthcare costs.
How long have you been around, and what sort of market share do you have, and what is your goal? And I mean, you know, realistically, where do you see yourself in like 5 or 10 years with this company?
We've been with our original company, we've been around for about 2 years, actually 3 years now, and we see ourselves taking control of the North Carolina market in the next year and expanding to the Southeast and really taking the model nationwide within the next three to five years regionally and 5 to 10 years nationwide to really take back control of out of control drug costs and bring an unlevel or unprecedented level of transparency or go beyond transparency to really highlight how much savings you can generate when we can really know what drugs cost and really highlight the value that they can offer for patients.
Do you feel at some point you'll have the opportunity to break into the box store pharmacies, or is this something that you feel like it only works with independent pharmacies?
Our goal and the integrity of the program rely on our collaboration with independent pharmacies. We really passionately believe that there is an unheard message out there for independent pharmacies. And we have nothing against the big box stores. Everyone is trying to help the members of their community. But we really believe there's a true value proposition and really a unique differentiator when it comes to the personal care you can get at independent pharmacy. And so we're going to stick to working with them, working for them, and really getting them unified to work with the other group in the healthcare industry that's that really we need to bring together, and that's the independent providers. And we can get those two groups to work together. We can do incredible things and really change the market.
Yeah. Well, and there certainly is plenty of room in the market for someone to have a model that would go after the big box. Right. I mean, there's always you want to try and focus and do what you do best and not have mission creep and start doing 10 things at once.
Right.
You know, the if I'm one of these large companies, the PBMs and with the, you know, the 80%, and I see someone like you, and if you start having some success, first thing I try and see if any sort of regulatory reasons I can shut you down. And then if that doesn't work, then pretty much the option is to just buy you up. And so are you publicly traded? Is this something that, is this a threat? Is that, or are you privately owned and immune to that, at least unless you chose to?
Great question. We are 100% privately owned and operated, and our partners have the same philosophy and focus to advocate and help independent pharmacy as well. And so, you know, we are very cognizant that companies that disrupt and innovate in healthcare oftentimes get bought out just to be eliminated. And we want to fight against that as best as we can, so that we can bring true market change and innovation that's long lasting for the benefit of all of us.
Well, that's a very exciting story, and it's always nice having people who leverage their expertise and the market to successfully be disruptors in the industry. And that's, I mean, that seems like exactly what you guys are doing. And it always, again, surprises me that you have to be ideologically sort of founded in some level to really take this on, because the easy thing would be to try and replicate what's already been done, through rebates or whatever. Is there anything else that you would like to add that we haven't talked about with the pharmacy benefit managers?
Pharmacy benefit management is just one vehicle to really execute on our cost plus model. We have we have some other products that we apply our cost plus modeling to, and that can help consumers. For example, we know that 10% of all of healthcare spend is through some sort of out-of-pocket spend, cash or out-of-pocket spend. And with a majority of the market having high deductible health plans, people are paying out of pocket for their first dollar of care, including pharmacy. And so we have other products that will, you know, help to change and make drugs more affordable, services that can compete against technology solutions like GoodRx, and additionally, programs that work with direct primary care providers as well. We know that direct primary care providers in many different states, in fact, 46 states, physicians are allowed to dispense in, and we don't want to interfere or get in the way of physicians dispensing drugs at affordable prices to their patients, but they don't have access to all the drugs. And we wanted to, we've created a solution to wrap around direct primary care services to offer access to all the medications that patients in a certain practice might need. And we're really excited about that program as well. And this is all just founded on our cost plus model and partnering independent doctors with independent pharmacies.
Is that something that you would look for direct primary care physicians to contact you, even if they're not in the North Carolina or the Southeast? Or is that, I mean, I just look at, for instance, my doctor here in Michigan, and she, it, if you're looking for generic medications, you can, it's wholesales, but when it comes to brand names especially, you know, she doesn't have anything special, except GoodRx is a good way to go.
All right. Absolutely. We have partners that can distribute to all 50 states. We can also have, we also have access to partners that can, with that, that direct primary care practices can purchase medications from. Today, wholesalers typically send direct primary care practices bulk bottles, and they have to and end up distributing that bulk bottle into individual patient sizes, labeling those bottles. We can take care of that process and get them individually labeled medications to their practices at the, you know, similar cost that they're buying to. For, and then, you know, distribution, if they need access to cost-saving measures outside of GoodRx. And in fact, we have a couple of programs that we know about that have helped hundreds of patients through the pharmacies that we partnered these practices with. So absolutely.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. And then we've talked about GoodRx a couple of times. Can you explain, somebody asked me the other day, how do they make money? I mean, I don't understand where they are, who they are, exactly, you know, what it is. I mean, do you have an idea?
As a pharmacist, it's my job to know how GoodRx operates and what they do. That's part of our, you know, it's part of our industry. And so to be very clear, GoodRx is a marketing company. They don't own a single tablet of medication. They don't own pharmacies. They are the, they were created to help consumers understand the cash prices for medications, or mm-hmm. you know, what is a expected price that I can pay for a drug at a pharmacy, and to some extent, when they were created, some 6 to 8 years ago, that was desperately needed, and now people sort of rely and talk about them as a resource. However, And the way that they make money is that when you go to a pharmacy and use a GoodRx card, GoodRx takes money from the pharmacy, from that prescription claim that you paid out of your pocket for, because GoodRx said that it's going to cost you $28 for levofloxacin at your pharmacy. GoodRx actually takes a portion of that money, a significant portion of that money, from the pharmacy to as their marketing service that they brought them to your door. And that's exactly why many, in fact, I don't know of any single independent pharmacy that really appreciates how their business model works. But they, you know, they're ready to match prices and help their patients get medications at affordable prices every day. But that's in a nutshell how GoodRx works, and they're there to sort of tell you, if you were to pay cash for a drug, for a medication that you need, here's how much it would cost. And that leads sort of to a second level issue or concern, at least in the healthcare community, is that we find that patients are shopping around multiple pharmacies to save a couple dollars. So I take six drugs, I now need to go to four different pharmacies.
Yes.
Because it's the cheapest price at those four different pharmacies. It's not always the same pharmacy at the top of the list when you look at, you know, where can I get a drug price? And then the second piece is, it may be cheapest when you looked at it that day, but then next month when you go in for a refill, the price can change. And the price can change dramatically. There's been price swings $50 to $100 for certain generic medications that are relatively inexpensive. And so you have to, you know, always be cognizant of that. Our platform advocates for one price at all our independent pharmacies, one cost plus price at all our independent pharmacies, so that you can get all your medications from one place for the safety and care of our patients.
Well, I mean, I've experienced that too. That's really pretty cool. And so you'd say you have about half the independent pharmacies in the country, or was that three quarters who are?
Yeah. So right now we have three quarters of the independent pharmacies today in our network.
How would you look that up?
So we are currently in development for an app that will allow patients to see, you know, which pharmacies that they can get their drugs for. And so that'll be coming out really soon here. And that'll be the best way to look up, you know, where the pharmacies are and how much these drug prices are. That'll be competitive.
Well, that's really interesting. And that's very exciting. And these are the things that with technology, you certainly have the ability to get broader markets and have a bigger reach, where you couldn't have done this, you know, 6 or 8 years ago. So that's right. That's pretty exciting. Well, I really appreciate the conversation. I learned a ton. I'm sure my listeners did too. Where can people find more about you? And if they want to, you know, get involved in, if they're a pharmacist listening to this, or if it's a physician who's looking to try and find discounted medications for their patients, or, you know, like you said, rather going to 10 pharmacies now, you just go to one and get the best price in all 10 of those medications. Absolutely. How's a good way to find things about you and your company?
So they can visit the website. Our website is makorx.com. That'll redirect to makopharmacy.com. It's the same company, same website. On that website, there is a phone number. They can reach me directly at 919-436-3359, extension 101. Or they can email me directly. That's V Patel, V as in Victor, P as in Paul, A, T as in Tom, E, L as in Larry, at makomedical.com. And I'm happy to have a conversation with any provider, direct primary care or otherwise, independent doctor and pharmacy that's interested in joining the revolution with us and really changing healthcare for the better.
Well, Mr. Patel, thank you so much for the conversation. I really enjoyed it so much.
Dr. Larson, thank you. It was an honor to be a guest on your show, and I look forward to coming back and sharing more when the opportunity arises.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to The Paradox. If you like what the doc is doing, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And share the show with your friends. Become a supporting listener to get access to special bonuses at patreon.com/theparadox. Show notes can be found at theparadox.com.